friends. Welcome to All Have Another Podcast with Lindsay Hine. I'm your host, Lindsay. Thank you so much for being here today. Today you are listening to episode 52, and I'm talking with Jody Whipple and Megan Marshall. They recently founded an organization called the Fly Movement to help women overcome body image issues. And Jody is a registered dietitian. Megan works as an academic advisor. The two of them teamed up and they created this beautiful project that they're going to share with you about. I have to say, in this conversation, I didn't expect to get out of it what I did, to be completely honest. I found myself very intrigued with the things that they were saying. And specifically with Jody, I really felt like, as I was talking to her, like, I want to soak up everything this woman is telling me, because she gave so much great advice about how to speak to your children about food and in a healthy way. And I was taking notes. And then Jody also has a really excellent book recommendation from a woman named Ellen Satter that I am planning to pick up. So I really know you guys are going to love this conversation with Jody and Megan, and I'm super excited to share it with you. I want to thank everybody who has left me a rating and review on iTunes. As I mentioned last week, I'm doing a giveaway, a $25 Starbucks giveaway for all the new reviews from last week, and then you have one more week, so until next Friday. And I also want to thank everybody who has been supporting the show on Patreon. It really, really means a lot to me, and it's really helpful. I'm actually, tonight I'm recording my second bonus episode that will go on to Patreon. So for Patreon pledgers only, you'll get access to this episode. And if you hang to the end of this episode with Megan and Jody, I'm going to tag on a teaser. So hang on to the end of this conversation and you can get a little dose of what these bonus episodes are all about. So before the conversation begins, I want to thank Prep Dish for sponsoring this episode of the podcast. You guys know I love Prep Dish. I love what they're doing. They are a healthy-based subscription meal planning service. This is all about saving time. Allison, the chef who is a dietitian, puts together a detailed grocery list in categories for you. And she has awesome recipes, delicious recipes that are either paleo or gluten-free, whatever you like, whatever you prefer. And you can prep those meals for the entire week. Some people like to prep on Sundays. Some people like to prep on Fridays, whatever. Whatever your week looks like, everybody's week is different. You can prep those meals and save yourself time, energy, while also feeding your family healthy, delicious meals. You can go to prepdish.com/another, use promo code another, all caps, to get a free 2-week trial. It's free. And when you guys support Prep Dish, you're supporting the podcast as well, since Prep Dish is a sponsor. So I really appreciate everybody who's tried it out. And I really appreciate you, Allison, and Prep Dish for sponsoring and supporting I'll Have Another Podcast. All right, guys, I know you're going to love this conversation with Jody and Megan. Enjoy. So we're talking to Megan Marshall and Jody Whipple. I'm so excited to have you guys on today.
We're excited to be here.
Welcome to I'll Have Another. Tell everybody a little bit about yourselves. Where you came from, where you grew up, all that good stuff.
Sure. So this is Megan Marshall. I grew up in Pennsylvania, Northeast Pennsylvania in Quakertown. I grew up in a farmhouse. I had three sisters. So a lot of the time we spent outside and in the woods. I actually didn't pick up running until high school. And then that transitioned. I ran in college at Penn State. So I've kind of stuck in Pennsylvania for a long time. And then I ended up getting my bachelor's, my master's at Penn State. And I moved back in 2012, met my husband at a trail running group, which was by coincidence and mutual friend. And then stayed here ever since. And I worked for the university as an academic advisor. So
awesome.
And I was born in Hong Kong. My dad was an airline pilot, and he was stationed in Hong Kong, so that was cool. I got to go back for my graduation gift, because I didn't really remember living there. And lived in Connecticut, and via some other places ended up in Michigan, graduating from high school, went to college. I became a registered dietitian. And I married my husband, who was my high school sweetheart's best friend. So that's sort of a...
That's hilarious. Are they still buddies?
They are, yeah. They're great friends. My kids think that it's kind of a hysterical story. It is a little... It's not even awkward, but you know, well, if you need.
It's how old are your kids?
15 and 17.
So they're, because they're right at that age where they would have a significant other, and they're probably thinking, putting themselves in your shoes. That's hilarious.
Exactly. No, we've stayed in touch, all of us, our families, our friends. We actually grew up in the same hometown but went to different high schools, so there's that relationship.
Oh my gosh, that's a great story, and that's like my new favorite question, is asking people how they met their significant other, so that's awesome.
So my husband and I own a private practice. He's a physical therapist, and I do nutrition counseling, and I do the office management. I used to work at the university, and that's how Megan and I met.
How fun is that? You guys own a practice together.
It's pretty cool.
Who's boss?
Who do you think?
I love that. So then, okay, so you guys, Megan and Jody, you guys met at the university when you were still working at the university.
Correct. So I worked with a group of professionals in the health education center, it's like the mini hospital on campus. And we started an intensive outpatient program for college students with disordered eating.
Okay.
We used to round every Friday. So that meant we had a team meeting every Friday where we would discuss our clients as well as any new research or just information that needed to be spread throughout the group. And then, so Megan found out about us, and I can let her tell you how she came to our group.
Sure.
Yeah, so I'm trying to think of the year, because it's been probably 2 years since we've met, but it was at a point in my life where, you have a story and you have an experience. So I had an eating disorder as a college athlete. Part of it for a long time was I felt regret and shame attached to that story, so I didn't want to talk about it. But I think I hit a striking point where I realized by not sharing is only hurting myself and only, you know, not helping create awareness for others that probably are, you know, going through the same experience. So I think that's when I realized, you know, there's resources out there, like what is being done at Penn State? How can I help? And so that's when I did reach out to the team and set up a meeting. And Jody and I didn't know each other, but we pretty much hit it off. We both were really passionate about sharing and creating awareness, you know, specifically at Penn State because it's so close to home, but also, you know, for other groups and anybody that really wanted, you know, to listen. So about 2 years ago, we met, and then a year after that, we formalized the Fly Movement and put, you know, a name with what we wanted to do. And workshops that could be, you know, useful for teams, for camps, which we've done. So it really has, you know, come together within the past 2 years for us.
So when you came to Jody, how far into recovery from your eating disorder were you?
It's probably like 3 years at that point.
Okay.
I would say I didn't fully recover until I got married. I've always lived on my own and never had that accountability partner. And I often say I didn't feel that unconditional love from somebody. So that really helped me understand, like, you know, my value in a way. So, and I think that's important, like speaking out to anybody. I think in the beginning when I was telling my story, I still got really emotional, and I think you still do. But I think in order to help others, I had to have a sense of confidence in, you know, what I went through. And I think that takes some time and sharing each time. So it's been beneficial, I guess, over the years and how many times we've spoken.
What is it about women's running and specifically, you know, competitive running in college that you guys think feeds into this eating disorder scene, for lack of a better term?
Do you want to answer that?
Well, yeah. So I can start, I guess, with as the clinician's voice, if you will. We know that there are many risk factors related to poor body image and eating disorders. So if you look at any collegiate women's track team, you know, not everyone's going to have an eating disorder, but many of them may have come from similar backgrounds. We know that genetics and biology play a huge role, that if there are eating disorders or poor body image in a family, the likelihood that other people in that family are going to struggle is high. We also know that somebody's psychological makeup and their personality characteristics contribute. So what I would say that I've seen is that collegiate athletics draw people who have characteristics of people who have eating disorders. Do they always go together? Absolutely not. But perfectionism, black and white thinking, very hard workers, sometimes depression and anxiety associated with sport can, when things get out of hand, can develop into an eating disorder. And also just the strenuousness of the training, we're recognizing that maybe those other factors are not present, but just merely keeping up with energy demands, calories, food, can be hard. It can be a part-time job for some people to get enough food in their systems. And there's something called REDS, which is relative energy deficiency in sport. And I tend to refer to people as falling into an eating disorder accidentally when they hit that, because your brain changes so much when you're malnourished. Your judgment, your perceptions, your ability to make decisions. And so it's not necessarily starting with a body image or a body dysmorphia or an ideal thinness issue, but it's literally not getting enough food and then seeing the fallout from that.
How does someone who's like a peer spot this and kind of, and as a peer, how would someone in a healthy way kind of approach their friend about it? I'm talking like someone who's your roommate in college or something like that.
That's an excellent question. And we just answered that question on Monday, actually, mm-hmm. at the screening of Embrace. I don't know if you've seen that film or heard about it. But so we showed it on campus, and there was a student in the audience who asked that question. And that can be tricky, certainly. One of the number one things that I recommend is that you don't approach the person by talking about how thin they are or their eating habits, because those are very often the very thing that the person struggling is holding on to for control. So setting aside a private time where there's little distractions and in a relaxed environment, pointing out to the person that you've noticed that they don't seem like themselves, that they maybe aren't, you know, getting enough sleep you've noticed, or that they might seem more irritable or have high stress levels, and that you're concerned about their well-being. And it can be as broad as that. And if they ask for examples, you can point some things out, but I wouldn't go right for the body size or right for the food. You can offer to go with them to appointments, and there's different people that they can see that they might be more comfortable with. So some people will absolutely go to the doctor, but there's no way they're going to a dietitian. Mm. Or they may say, if I can, what I'm eating, I know I'll feel better, and then the dietitian could refer them to the therapist or the physician. And so having those resources available. So if you're the person going to someone who's concerned, maybe look at some resources in the community, offering to go to the appointment with them. And since denial is such a big part of this, as the concerned it can be tough, because the person can be so entrenched in denial, but at least you've planted the seed of concern.
Now, I feel like a lot of our listeners here, not everybody, but a lot of our listeners are parents and or plan to be parents someday. I'm a mom of three boys, so at this point in my life, not that men can't have eating disorders, but I know it's obviously more prevalent in women. You know, what's some advice you could give to, you know, a mom of a 12-year-old who's kind of entering that scene where in their head, you know, eating disorders might start happening with their peers, and you start hearing people talk about their bodies and puberty and all that. Gosh, I mean, I remember back to when I was a kid and maybe some, you know, some unhealthy things that my mom even said to my sisters and I. What are some key things you would say to that parent who wants to create a healthy atmosphere?
I have a 17-year-old son and a 15-year-old daughter, and have absolutely faced them. And I have a number of clients who are males, and I think that is something that we forget about, or there just maybe aren't as many resources because this is thought of as more of a female issue.
Mm-hmm.
But parents can do a lot. So the way that you talk about your body and the way that you act about towards your body are huge. So talking about function over form is very, very important. There are resources on the NEDA site, the National Eating Disorder Awareness site, actually for parents, how to prevent disordered eating and body image issues. I would highly recommend that people look up that. There are some books. My mentor for the last 25 years has been a woman named Ellen Satter. She has really been a pioneer in pediatric nutrition. And she writes about the power of our ability to regulate our food intake internally. So the diet industry is a $50 billion industry. It's designed to sell us something. It encourages us to look at the scale, to look at the size of our clothing, to look at our body shape and size, to look at the time on the clock, to look at calories, all these external factors. If I've done anything right as a parent feeding my picky son and my not so picky daughter, it's really helping them to realize that they can trust their internal cues of hunger and fullness. That they do not have to clean their plate, that they don't even have to try foods that gross them out, but that as the parent, you're in charge of the what, when, and where of feeding, and they're in charge of eating, whether or not they do eat, and how much they eat. And that can be tough for parents because a lot of issues. They're reading labels, they're getting on the scale, they're worried about the size of their clothes. But I tell you what, if you could get a hold of Ellen Satter's books,
okay,
how to get your kid to eat but not too much. Fantastic read. It's very science based, but also conversational. She's a social worker and a registered dietitian. I've met her. I've talked to her. I've learned from her. I've stayed in touch with her. She's, I would say, in this country, probably pediatrician's best resource for relationships with food, as well as just healthy intake, which doesn't always mean A+ healthy food, if you know what I mean.
Well, I feel like I recognize her name even.
You probably,
yeah,
magazine or different places.
Yeah, that's interesting because my oldest is only 4.5, and like I mentioned, he's a boy. You're talking like starting these things now when they're 2, 3, right?
Talking starting it at birth. A 4.5-year-old who's your oldest, then that means you probably have a baby.
Yes.
Or like a, right?
I have a 4.5, a 2-year-old, and a 4-month-old.
Okay. So your best teachers on how to eat are your children. Your 4-month-old, you cannot make your 4-month-old eat. And you cannot cut your 4-month-old off if they have not had enough
right.
food. They are not eating because their onesie is 6 month size and not 3 month size. They are not overeating because your breast milk is so delicious or because that they shouldn't have it because it's so high in fat. We are all absolutely attuned to that hunger and fullness. We get distracted as we get older because we get other messages, but I am absolutely talking about starting at birth. And if you look at your toddlers and you put them in a high chair or up at the table, they will stop in the mid-bite of a cookie. Or if they have broccoli florets, they will not clean their plate. Am I correct?
Yeah. Now, my question is this. Well, because, you know, what was I thinking here with my four-year-old? Yeah, like, so I feel like kids, though, specifically my four-year-old, they always want snacks. And I do say things like this to my son. I'm like, well, you eat when you're hungry, right? Like, so I feel like he wants snacks even when he's not hungry just because it's fun to eat sometimes. You know what I mean?
Really? And it is fun.
Yeah. So, but how do I enter a healthy conversation about that, though, without, you know, making food an issue?
Excellent question. So what you do is you have regular meal and snack times, and you develop a relationship with him, and he develops a relationship with you where you are confident that you will be providing for him, and he is confident that he will be provided for. So the way that looks is 8 o'clock in the morning, I'm just going to throw out arbitrary times, breakfast is served. You decide what, when, and where. He decides how much.
Okay.
If you're thinking, okay, you know, I've got these three little ones to take care of. I've got podcasts to schedule. I've got, you know, exercise. I have stuff I need to do. We will be having snack like around 10 or 10:30. I mean, you don't have to write it on the board, but in your mind, you know that you're going to offer a snack again soon, especially because those 4.5-year-old bellies, they don't get filled up to the extent that they can wait for a long time. So when he starts asking for a snack at 9, you say, you know what, honey, we're going to have a snack in a little while. I mean, I don't know, you know, he's probably brilliant, right? He probably can tell time, but we're going to have a snack. We're going to have a snack in a little while. Let's find something else to do. And, you know, I'll see you at snack time. And at first, in my experience, if that's not the pattern that you have right now, he will protest. He will push your buttons, push your limits. He will be nasty, maybe. But you have to hold your ground, because as a parent, you can be very confident that between 8 and 10:30 a.m., not allowing food to happen, that's fine.
Okay.
Not gonna be fine. And he will come to trust that, oh yeah, I don't need to throw a tantrum. Maybe I need to eat a little bit more at breakfast. Maybe I just have to learn to be a decent human being because, you know, I don't get everything I want when I want it. And my mom loves me and takes care of me. And I know that there will be food at, you know, snack time. And then maybe lunch is at 12:30, and then another snack at 3, and then maybe dinner at 6. And some of the things, you know, and we can talk about this in more detail, but in Ellen Satter's book, this is called The Division of Responsibility. She does a great job of, she invented it, she does a great job of explaining it.
Okay, so two follow-up questions, and then we'll get on to more about what the fly movement does. But my follow-up questions are this. How about when you hear parents say, well, you have to finish your chicken nuggets before you can have your cookie? What about that?
Well, if you're asking me what I think when I hear parents say that, I
did you say you cringe?
I do cringe. Okay. Yeah, I would say, and I wish that I could sit down with them and tell them a better way, because if that's what's happening and that's what I'm hearing, I'm guessing there's lots of battles at the table that could be avoided.
So if you have a child and there is a dinner and there is an option for a dessert, what do you as a parent, when you had, you know, maybe like a 6-year-old or 7-year-old, what would you have done in that situation?
So what I would do, and again, this is, I'm like an Ellen Satter groupie, okay? I would actually offer the dessert with the rest of the food.
Okay.
And so everybody gets one portion of dessert. That's just sort of the rule.
Okay.
And you eat it whenever you want. If you want it to be the first thing that you eat, if you want to eat it as you go along, if you want to eat it at the end, that's fine. And what you find is that kids and most people in general are not going to be satisfied or filled up on just one brownie or one cookie or one scoop of ice cream. So all the other foods, you know, if it's the grain, the protein, the starch, the dairy, the fat, all of those other foods are available in unlimited quantities depending on how much you've made. But once the dessert is gone, it's gone. So,
and if that's what they, and that's, if that's all they choose to eat, that's all they choose to eat. And
you say, okay, you know, see you at breakfast. Or okay, if you're as an evening snack, then you can say, all right, you know, we'll see you at evening snack. And then you get to decide what's being served and they get to decide how much.
I love it. That is so good. I'm going to start using that method, because, you know, I found myself in that situation. And I mean, I hear my sister-in-laws do it. I think I hear almost every parent do it. You have to eat this before you eat that.
And then we wonder why people crave certain foods. You know, we don't sell potato chips and ice cream, right? We don't say you have to eat your potato chips and ice cream with your broccoli. So you have this elevation of food value just by making those kinds of comments, which people don't really realize. I mean, I didn't realize it early in my career or early I think I did as a mother because I read these books before. But anyway, you know what I'm saying.
I've got to get that book. I'm so excited about it now. I'm making it a goal in my life to read more books. I have to put the social media down and read more books, you know. And you always feel more filled up when one of the books you're reading is educational and one is kick back and relax. I want to thank Now Foods for sponsoring this episode of the podcast. Now Foods has been a leader in the natural health industry for a long time. I'm talking like 30 years now. They have supplements, beauty and health products, essential oils, sports nutrition, food, organic healthy food, lots of good oils like this coconut oil infused with garlic. It is really good for cooking. I've never been a huge coconut oil fan, even though I know it's so good for you, but I really like the coconut oil that's infused with garlic. It's super good. I have been using their sugarless sugar in my coffee in the morning. You know what I've been doing? So I ran out of creamer the other day, and I've been doing coffee with a tiny bit of vanilla extract and then a little bit of their sugarless sugar, and it's really, really good. And it doesn't taste quite as sweet as my normal like French vanilla creamer that I use that's probably way too sugary to start my day with, to be completely honest. So anyway, Now Foods is offering listeners of the podcast a 25% discount off your entire purchase. That is huge. So if you're getting your vitamins and supplements somewhere else, you might as well get them from Now Foods because they're offering you 25% off. It's huge. So you guys can go to now-2-u.com and enter promo code another, all caps, to save 25%. Thank you, Now Foods, for sponsoring I'll Have Another Podcast. Okay, so you guys, tell me about the fly movement. Tell me what you guys do and kind of why you started it.
Yeah, so I guess about a year ago is when we were thinking, well, we should put this into action. So I think our first real workshop was at the Northeast Bird Camp, which is for Wazelle, the women's running, the women's running brand. So I was a part of the Voile, which is, you know, you're a part of this team of women where you're all over the world, essentially, but you support each other. You can go to meetups, and it's just a really good opportunity to plug in and be inspired by others. So I thought it was a good idea to reach out and then pitch our idea of talking about body image, creating awareness. But our workshops weren't officially named until after that. Like, we plugged in with a girl, which then she created our logo, and then the name, which FLY stands for Fuel Love You. So we wanted it to not only be about just one specific, you know, not just about body image. Like, that's our base of, you know, what is it, you know, talking about it, but also like tools to take away, you know, offering up my story a little bit and how we can relate to that. But then, you know, tools, we use videos, a lot of the Dove self-esteem, they do a lot of videos that are really like informational and inspirational. So we use those as well. And we have them like in the bird camp, and draw themselves, kind of sketch out just as like a rough draft, but also, you know, say out loud 5 things you like about yourself. Because some of these things we don't normally do. Like, we always pick out the negative, but we wanted to focus in on the positive. So that's just one example, I guess, within our workshop that we used.
What is a general, like, what is a general workshop that you guys do look like?
So with some of the workshops, depending on the time limit, like for teams or if we had more time at a camp, we have done skits where the first skit was in the beginning and we would have a narrative of what people may say in a conversation, but it pointed out all the negative things we say and how we pick ourselves apart. And then in the end, we would then redo the narrative and use some of the tools or correct ourselves before, you know, if a friend was saying, oh, I hate this about myself, to correct them or to not allow negatives to be said in the conversation. But after the skit, we would do more of the informational piece. So I would talk about my story and body image. Jody would present information on, you know, how body image could become negative and the positives, and then
the influences
on body image. And then I believe at the end, we would do the activity and the videos and then questions. But typically that's the flow of the workshop. And that was kind of the base of all last year. This year we're looking into focusing on different topics.
So is your goal to kind of get out and get in front of different teams, and like what groups are you targeting?
It was easier for us to do different sports teams at Penn State because they're here.
Right.
But we also did the bird camp, and then we did Kara Goucher's podium retreat mm-hmm. in the fall. That took a little bit more coordinating and traveling. We found definitely a niche with women runners because of my experience and being able to relate in that way. But we don't want to just short tail our story because we feel like any athlete, specifically, you know, females or men, could hear it and hear the message. So we've been talking to other, you know, sports teams wanting, like cheerleading, for example, like mm-hmm. they have male athletes. So, you know, that's in the works to be able to talk to both the males and females.
So if you had to, you know, break it down, what is your ultimate message with the Fly movement?
I don't know.
Yeah. So our message is to fuel your mind, body, and soul, to love yourself just the way you are, and to realize that you can make a difference.
Love that. So good. It's so good. What are your goals? I mean, is it, you know, what are your goals for who you're getting in front of and, you know, long-term, short-term?
Our goal is to be on Ellen.
Yes.
Yes.
That's great. Ellen would love what you're doing.
He said that ago, and I would say we haven't wavered from that. Ideally, we would like come in during preseason mm-hmm. of any sport, probably the high-risk sports, mm-hmm. and give people information, education, resources, and affirmation that they have a role in this, that they themselves as individual athletes and teams and coaches and athletic trainers can come together and talk transparently mm-hmm. with themselves, with each other. And we want people to talk mm-hmm. as openly about body image and eating disorder in sports as they talk about concussions and stress fractures. Mm. So that is our goal. And to the degree that we can get it to as many people, from amateurs, high school, college, and post-college athletes, pro athletes, we have absolutely, interest has been expressed on all of those levels. And in my experience, the earlier we start, the better, and the more it's repeated, the better. So we feel like there is a really large audience for this.
I would definitely agree with that.
It would be great if this outgrew us mm-hmm. because though, you know, more and more teams and more people need it. So, you know, developing these materials, but then kind of handing them off in the future if grow that large, which would be pretty great.
Right, like just, if every high school cross-country team could have, or track team or whatever, could have access to the materials, and that could just be part of the curriculum that the coach instills?
Yeah, so that would be great, because then the coach is taking the initiative to spread that message, which I think, like, if you're a college athlete and you're coming into college as, you know, away from your parents, away from kind of, I mean, in high school, like, you know, my coach was very involved in my life. But then when you get to college, like, you're a part of a larger group, and you're kind of looking to them as that parent figure. But I think, you know, if they normalize this and the team environment, then I think that would be great. I think that's what the missing piece is sometimes.
Now, in your experience, did you ever have I don't want to, like, say anything negative about any of your past coaches, but did you ever have experience with any coaches where they might have said something that triggered you as someone that struggled with an eating disorder?
Yeah, I think that's part of it. I think, you know, words can definitely drive and trigger, you know, an issue from happening or if it's going on. I think, you know, just like parents and the way you talk about food, I think that plays a huge role. And, you know, it's a mixed bag. I've met great coaches, and I see coaches now that are really great. Michigan State, I feel like that coach has supported. I know one of their athletes just came out
I
and
saw
talked
that
about
picture.
Her. So the support that they've given her to become a healthy person, a whole person, not just, oh, you're an athlete, I think that is out there. And I love seeing stories like that because it urges me that things are changing. But I think there is a mixed bag.
I grew up in the figure skating world. I was a competitive figure skater. And so I reached my current height, which is 5'8", in like fifth grade. And I have two very thin parents. So, I mean, you know, if I were to gain a lot of weight, it would be because I was working really, really hard at it. I just am genetically a pretty thin person. And in the figure skating world, they were putting us on the scale, you know, as 6th, 7th, and 8th graders, and at 120 pounds at 5'8", saying you need to watch your weight, you know. And so looking at the way that coaches direct body analysis, body composition, body comments, and recognizing that competitive, successful, strong athletes come in all shapes and sizes. They can be too thin, they can be too heavy, they can be somewhere in between, and that does not necessarily equate to health. So recognizing that there are other measures besides just that number on the scale, no matter where it falls. And I think that having coaches who are sympathetic to that really sets an environment for a sport, a team, an individual.
Gosh, it seems like it's being talked about more now. I mean, I'm 33. I don't know if the adults were talking about it 15 years ago and I wasn't hearing it because I was a kid, but like, it seems like to me, if my child is 15, 13 or whatever, and I see them or hear about them being at practice where their coach is weighing them, I'm going to have a big problem with that. And I feel like more parents are going to be speaking out about it now than 15, 20 years ago. Am I imagining that, or do you think that's true?
Oh, I would say that I think it is true, while at the same time, there is this panic going on over the obesity epidemic.
True.
So I think that competes for time and space.
Well, rightfully so, too. I mean, you're dealing with one extreme and the other here.
Absolutely.
Gosh.
Absolutely.
Do you, and now this is just a random off-note question, but I personally just, like, don't have a scale in my home. I don't, you know, it's just something I've chosen not to make a part of my life. And, you know, like I said, I do have boys, but I think even more so if I had girls, I would be even more hardcore about that. What are your thoughts on that? Do you have a scale in your house?
I don't. No, I don't have a scale in my house. And because this is my field, this is what I do every day. And because my husband is involved in sports too, as an orthopedic physical therapist, this is a lot of our dinner time conversation. So our kids, they come home from their nutrition classes at the middle school and the high school, and they're like, you are not going to believe what they told us today. And they're like, oh yeah, we learned all about BMI, which I call the big made up invention. So I, you know, my kids are maybe a little unique in that they've heard sort of the down and dirty. My daughter is a competitive swimmer, and she, you know, swimmers. I mean, she eats us all under the table.
Oh yeah, I bet.
She still has a hard time keeping on weight. And this was the first year actually as a high schooler that she started commenting about some of the weight loss, and she was really curious about what she weighed. And I asked her what she thought and did she need any help with making sure she was being nourished enough and, you know, how she was just feeling about her body, and had a really open conversation about it. We don't have a scale. That's not an option. There's not one at the high school as far as I know. So that's not an option. And I mean, I'm happy to say it just sort of, it was the end of the conversation, but she did say to me, you know, I would be really surprised for a parent not to recognize that something was going on with their child. So that gives me a little bit of comfort to know that I've got, she knows I've got my eye on her in a way, even though I'm not, you know, hovering.
Mm-hmm. That's good. That's really good. I want to thank Prep Dish one more time for sponsoring this episode of the podcast. What Prep Dish can do for you is help you save time, help you be more efficient, and help you serve delicious meals to your family. My friend Kristen recently used Prep Dish, and she texted me that there was a recipe for some pear muffins, her most recent list of recipes, and she really loved them. So I'm excited to try the pear muffins myself. So the cool thing about Prep Dish is not only does she give you recipes and grocery lists for breakfast, lunch, and dinner, she gives you ideas for snacks and desserts too. So those pear muffins, excited to try them. You guys can try out Prep Dish for free for 2 weeks. Just go to prepdish.com/another, use promo code another, all caps. Get a free 2-week trial. And you guys, follow Prep Dish on social media, Instagram, Twitter, whatever. Allison, it seems like to me that she travels a lot, and so her Instagram stories are always fun and interesting to look at. Don't forget to hang to the end of the episode, because I'm going to give you a teaser of what my bonus episodes for Patreon pledgers looks like at the end of this episode with Jody and Megan. The rest of my conversation with these wonderful ladies.
What can we do to help you promote the Fly movement and what you're doing? How can other people who are like, I love what they're doing, how can we get involved?
Well, obviously, I feel like we're in a day and age where social media is huge. So obviously, we're on all social media handles, but any reposting or retweeting or anything like that, but also visiting our website, which is loveflymovement.com, and that's how you can get to our social media avenues. But we also are doing more blog posts. You know, it's just an avenue where people can talk about, you know, how, what they went through, and then we're reposting those. But anything, like, we hope in the future to post videos and just to, you know, if we can offer a workshop and partner, that would be great as well.
Give them a number.
Yeah. Email or, you know, connecting with them that way.
Yeah. So like if I'm a cross country coach and I want you guys to come do a workshop, just send you guys an email and we can talk about it from there.
And if it's something where, you know, funding wise, like we're definitely flexible because we want this message to get out there. Or even if we have to, maybe not Skype, but
yeah,
but do, you know, a podcast or something in, you know, for a school, like we could, you know, do that instead.
Well, I will put on the show notes, your email, your website, all that information, so people can contact you if they're interested in a workshop. I don't want to move on because I love talking about this, and I feel like as a parent, I'm gaining so much knowledge here.
on how to do things. It's so funny because I always kind of prided myself on, I'm not reading parenting books. Like, I'm just going to, you know, do this and figure it out. But, and, you know, my kids are still so young, but now I'm like, wait, maybe I should start reading the parenting stuff because somebody's got some good advice.
I would highly recommend it. And doing it now when things are relatively simple, and I in no way mean to imply that having a 4-month-old or 4.5-year-old is simple, but things go from getting physically difficult and challenging to more emotionally difficult and challenging. And if you're armed and ready, then when that comes, you will be armed and ready.
That's so good.
The degree that you prepare yourself.
Well, we'll put links to Ellen's books on the show notes, and maybe I'll make it a goal to get one of them read next month. What's the best advice you've ever been given?
The best advice, I would say two pieces of advice. One is my sister-in-law, who also has three kids, told me that take care of your family first, and other things will fall into place. And the reason she said that to me is because after I gave birth to my son, I immediately wanted to go into social services and adopt like 10 children. I couldn't believe. And she's like, Jody, take care of your own child, and that will be a great gift to the world. And then this isn't necessarily advice, but the serenity prayer is something that I absolutely fall back on. And, you know, no matter your religious beliefs or affiliations, the words there in terms of what you can control and what you can't, and knowing, you know, the difference and where you're going to put your energies has saved me on a number of occasions.
Well, I used to work for Back on My Feet, and we said the serenity prayer before every opening circle. And I'm going to remember it. God, grant me the serenity to accept the things God grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change. Okay, you guys say it. I'm going to say it wrong.
Go ahead.
Oh, I don't know by heart.
God grant me the serenity to accept the things that I cannot change, to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference.
Love it. Yes. It's so simple, but, like, speaks volumes.
Huge.
Yeah, that's great. What about you, Megan?
Two words, be patient.
Ooh, everybody can take something from that.
It makes a lot of people cringe, and it made me cringe a lot when my parents would say it, but I feel like over the years, over a lot of different things, you know, it's almost like you learn and grow in the waiting, and I feel like I've embraced that most of the time now, yeah.
That's so good. When my oldest was... He must have been 2.5 or 3, must have been closer to 3 because he was really talking a decent amount. His parents' day out teacher said he was waiting in line for snacks, and he looked at her and he said, Mrs. Kelly, being patient is hard. And, you know, it was like, I didn't even know that I had taught him that word. And it was one of those moments where I was just like, oh man, you know, that's so sweet. And it's so true, even a 2.5-year-old, you know, grasps that. We can use that for lots of things in our lives. If you could have coffee or cocktail with anybody, who would it be?
Jim Gaffigan and Ellen.
Oh my gosh, I love those answers. That's so fun.
He's coming to our local venue, so I hope I can go.
We saw him here in Indiana. We saw him at the fairgrounds a couple years ago.
Yeah, very funny.
So I have a favorite author, Elizabeth Berg. She writes about mainly women's, not issues, because she writes fiction, but one of the first books of hers that I read was Talk Before Sleep, and it was about women's friendships and conversations and the bond between women, and most of her books give a voice to women and for women. And I follow her on Facebook, and one of the things I love about her is she will write out scripts of what her pets say. So like literally these conversations she has with dogs and her cat, and she can always get a laugh out of me and a smile, and she's sweet.
I love that. Some people are so talented with that kind of stuff. Like, I'm just saying, like, a simple Facebook post, they're not even putting that much thought into it. They throw it out there in 10 minutes, but it's like, everybody loves it. It's hilarious.
Yes.
That's a talent. What are you loving these days? What's hot in your life?
I would say, I don't know when you give it. Run Fast, Eat Slow is, I think, a lot of people's favorite cookbook right now. And I think, like, I really like it. Jody gave it to me, so that's why I'm looking at her. I really like it because it's not a diet. Mm-hmm. Like, I really like, the whole ingredients they use. And it's still tasty. Like, that's the thing. Like, really great food can taste really good, too. And Farm to Feet socks, actually. My husband is a trail runner, so they came to one of the big trail races. And they're located in North Carolina. And very comfortable socks, and they're all local. So I just really like the feel of them, and really supportive socks for running as well.
And I am loving teaching myself how to play the piano.
Aww.
I got a keyboard for, so I'm on the last chapter of my first little book, so that's exciting. And I love my Skechers performance sneakers. They're the Forzas, I think. They look like rubber bouncy balls, and they're comfortable. They're totally waterproof, which here in Pennsylvania is a great characteristic. Mm-hmm. And also, I'm doing a lot of crocheting.
Oh, my goodness. I love that. Crocheting. Is it therapeutic? Do you find it?
Yes. It's very meditative. Yeah.
Funny story about crocheting is that we have this thing here in Indy called the Trade School. Do you guys have one like something like that? So
explain more.
Okay, so basically, it's a really cool concept. It's a free school, and you bring your gift or talent and teach it, So say you're the teacher. Say you're the crochet teacher, and you're teaching like crocheting 101. You pick a nonprofit or something that you love. So say you love the local animal shelter. You say, okay, so in exchange for this free class, just bring like 3 blankets for the animal shelter or towels or whatever, and it's free. So I went, I don't know if it was crocheting or knitting, but I went and I was so frustrated, and like my fingers are kind of thick. And I was like, I don't want to be rude to this teacher, but I really just want to get up and leave right now. And I never went back to the class. Like, they cute, because then they had like level 2, level 3 or whatever. I wonder if you guys have one though, a trade school.
I don't think we do, but hearing you describe it makes me think of several people that we need to talk to maybe get it going.
Yeah. I mean, isn't it such a cool concept? Like, you could go in and teach a class for people struggling with eating disorders or just a nutrition 101 class. I know I thought about doing it and doing like a running 101 class.
Yeah, absolutely.
Have never gotten my stuff together to make it happen. But yeah, it's a really cool concept for sure. What's the best, most recent book you've read?
I'm going to be 50 this year. So The Wisdom of Menopause by Christine Northrup is coming in very handy right now.
Love that.
And also there's a book called Tools of the Titans. I don't know if any of you have heard of it. It's by a guy named Tim Ferriss. It's like 700 pages long, but it's divided into healthy, wealthy, and wise. Those are the sections. And essentially he interviews about 300 people, and he asks a lot of these questions, but just life lessons, everyone from artists to entertainers to Navy SEALs to politicians. I mean, it's been fascinating so far, so I would recommend it.
How far in are you?
I think I've read about like 6 people, 6 out of the 300, so not far. But it takes me about 2 pages to get hooked on a book, and I'm hooked.
So are you reading the book, or are you reading it on a Kindle?
Actually, I'm reading the book. I do have a Kindle, but reading the book.
Okay, love it.
And I finished Present Over Perfect by Shauna Nyquist.
Oh, yeah.
I think she's great because she's very real, which I really like about a person. But then she's also done other books where she has like a devotional for the day and then a recipe, or like how to be more welcoming to guests. So I think that's a great lesson in a lot of her books.
I feel like there's a lot of authors like her coming out with books about slowing down and being present. And it's like, which one do you choose to read? Because they can't all be good.
No. And I feel like because I've latched onto a lot of her books, I've kind of stuck with it. But I think that's a great message. Slowing down, having a rest day because, you know, the week is crazy. You know, Saturday or Sunday, I like doing meal prep. So it becomes my.
That's good. Okay, we'll do one more real quick. Give me your top two favorite people to follow on social media.
Oh, boy.
We both like Ellen. Yes. So Ellen would be one.
And we both, I would say Kara Goucher. Alicia Montano is really great. I just think they're really powerful women, mom, role models. They're real. They fight for great causes, personable in person.
Yeah. So. And Glennon Doyle Melton, Mama's Dairy.
Totally. Did you read her book, her most recent one?
In fact, I've only read the most recent one. I have to go back and read her first one.
Same. Exactly. I just finished, I didn't just finish it. I read Love Warrior, like as soon as it came out, and I think I got through it in a week. Yeah, she's good. She really is such a talented writer. Well, you guys, I've loved talking to you and learning about what you're doing. And, you know, Jody, you've given me a lot of insight on how I talk to my children, to be quite frank, about food. So I appreciate that.
You're welcome. It's been a pleasure.
Have a great rest of the day, ladies.
Too.
Bye.
Bye, Lindsay.
All right, everybody. Thank you so much for listening today. Thank you, Jody and Megan, for coming on the show. Thank you, Prep Dish and Now Foods for sponsoring. And of course, thank you to all of my Patreon pledgers for supporting the show as well. You guys made it to the end of this episode, and I promised I would give you a 5-minute teaser of what a bonus episode looks like. I'm recording my second bonus episode tonight here in about 40 minutes, and I'm super excited to provide Patreon supporters with these episodes, and I also have a lot of fun recording them. I am drinking a Voodoo Ranger Imperial IPA. You guys, it's 9% alcohol. So I think it's going to make for a fun conversation for my bonus episode. It's going to be real fun. All right, enjoy this little teaser, and if you love it, you can go to patreon.com/LindsayHine. And jump on the Patreon bandwagon. All right, you guys. As always, I will see you next Friday. You have a wonderful weekend.
Yeah. It's pretty crazy. We've been now at this point. It's been a long time. But yeah, it's great. So, but anyway, back to breakup songs.
Yes, back to breakup songs. And to give you a little bit of rundown then of my history, I had a serious boyfriend in high school, but he wasn't that serious because he cheated on me all the time. He was a terrible boyfriend. He was awful.
Sounds like a cat.
I'm sure he's hopefully nice now. He has a girlfriend now. You know, I know that because of Facebook, obviously. Mm-hmm. I hope he's great to her. Maybe he is. I think he is. I don't know. But he wasn't great as a 16-year-old boyfriend. Mm-mm. So, but
not many are.
Anyway, like that was like a 2.5-year relationship. That's really long when you're 16.
Yeah.
And then I had a boyfriend at like right after high school through like probably 2 years of college.
Okay. And also decent.
And then I had a year off and then I found Glenn. So Glenn and I started dating my senior year of college. So I had some breakup songs in there.
Yeah. Oh,
these are going to be really old school though, because I mean, these were
okay, so
long time ago. Okay.
I mean, I have like 10, so I'm sorry. I just like wrote them all down. I couldn't pick.
I wonder if we like intersect.
Okay, so in no particular order.
Okay, go first.
Okay, the first one is John Mayer, Slow Dancing in a Burning Room.
Oh, that's a great one.
I don't even like John Mayer, but I remember that song and being like, this is a really good breakup song.
That is a great breakup song.
Yep. Okay, Alanis Morissette, You Ought to Know.
That's a mad breakup song.
Still such a good song. It's still good. Listen to it. Christina Aguilera, Fighter. So that's on my running playlist,
that's
by the
so
way.
That's so good. Yes, that's
and
a great.
I also use that all the time in spin classes. I actually use a lot of this list in spin class.
That's
because
really
when
good.
You're angry, you know, you work out harder.
Right.
Katy Perry, Part of Me.
Mm. I don't know that song.
She performed it at the Grammys.
This year?
No. It's 3-4 years ago, maybe. When she got divorced from Russell Brand.
Okay. And two side notes there. A, I did not name my third child after Russell Brand.
I don't think anyone thought you did.
But I did take note that you know, he was one of the famous people named Russell. B, Glenn is a big Katy Perry fan.
I love Katy Perry.
Yes. Love her. Okay, next.
Okay, Everybody Hurts.
That's so good.
So good. And Since You've Been Gone.
Oh, yeah.
Kelly Clarkson. And I also have Cry Me a River on here because I'm obsessed with Britney Spears. And even though it's a Justin Timberlake song, it's about Britney Spears.
Totally. And that's a really, really great song. Yep. On the same lines of, what was the one before you just said?
Since You've Been Gone.
Since You've Been Gone. Kelly Clarkson also has that independent song, Miss Independence. Mm-hmm. That's also...
That's a good one.
Yeah, because you're like, I'm independent. I don't need
you. I was about to sing it, but I definitely don't want to hurt your listeners' ears.
Well, I've already done that. Okay, none of ours are the same.
So this okay. is good. This is good.
So this is what brought this question to my mind. Okay, first of all, I don't know how your spin classes are. I'm sure in New York City you guys have your Soul Cycle and all these like awesome classes.
I taught at New York Sports Club, which I taught in Hoboken and I taught in Montclair, which were nicer areas. So the clubs were nicer and the studios were nicer. But even now, the reason why I decided to teach is because some instructors were terrible and their songs were terrible. And the whole entire class, I was just like wanting to leave. I would never do that. I've never left a class even when it was terrible because that's just so rude. And I just thought I could do a better job.
Yeah.
I just joined Lifetime Fitness, actually. Have you heard of it? I don't know if you have them. And, you know, it's not cheap, but it's like a good club. Like there's great childcare and I love it. And I would love to teach it. Their studios are great. Their studios are closer to like the Soul Cycle, like dark room, loud music kind of thing. And like, yeah. I feel like that's my jam and I could really get into that.
So the one, and I totally agree with you on the instructor's thing. Like, if you don't have a good instructor, like, it makes or breaks the class.
100%.
Sure. I found a really good instructor. She teaches 9:30 spin at the Y. And she also does 5:30, but I don't do early mornings. But I don't know if they do this where you taught or where you go. But she plays, like, the music video on this huge screen. So okay, I'm, like, cool. spinning really the Tupac cool. and while also watching his music video. It is that's awesome.
Amazing. No, I did not do that. The only cool thing I did was, and I had to ask to do it because apparently no one else does it. I took, like, a dry erase and wrote the terrain, essentially, on the board so you know when you have hills and stuff.
The girl who normally teaches was out last week and I hadn't been in a couple weeks and they had some random 22-year-old teaching the class, which I'm not trying to be ageist, but I feel like my girl is probably like 40 and she's got some spin
around the block
experience. Yeah. She is so good that I'm like, and this girl kept like singing along with the songs
in the microphone
too loud into the microphone. Like, I get it sometimes. It's fine sometimes. But she was like, and I kind of also wanted to be like, how do you expect us to be working hard when you're kind of just like singing and you probably don't even have any resistance on your bike?
No, none. So as an instructor, I've been in both. I would get off the bike a lot like get in people's faces and dance and stuff.
Yeah. The girl I like does that. Yeah.
And I've also stayed on the bike the entire time. I kind of just go off the vibe of the room. Depends who's in the class.
That's what made you a good teacher.
Yeah. I'm actually like pretty pumped to go back. I have to check out when they have auditions.
With all that spare time that you have.
Negative spare time.
Okay, my breakup songs.
Okay, yes. Let's loop back somehow. I don't know how we got here.
Yes. So I was in spin class and Let It Burn came on. It must have been on like a slow hill or something. And I was like, this is such a good breakup song.
Oh, my goodness.
So Usher, Let It Burn. Come on. How good is that?
So good. I love Usher.
I love Usher too. Yeah. Okay, that brings me back to my like breakup, like my beginning of college breakup, that song. Okay.
Do you remember the song Monica and Brandy, The Boy Is Mine?
Oh yeah, totally.
Like, talk about you girls are stupid. I was in eighth grade when that song came out. I loved it.
Yep.
But you guys are dumb because he's playing both of you.
Right, exactly. Brandy and Monica. Moesha.
Moesha.
Okay, so then I have Keith Urban, You'll Think of Me.
Oh, I've heard of that. I've heard of it.
It's a good one. I have two more. Boys to Men, End of the Road.
Good one.
That was brought to us by my friend Megan. And then this is my favorite. Brian McKnight, 6-8-12.
Nice choice.
Do you know that one?
I do. That is unexpected. I didn't think you would talk about that. Thanks for bringing that up.
It's good, isn't it? Okay, right. Those are our top five breakup songs. I love it.
Good.
Moving on. What podcasts are you listening to these days? All right, guys, to hear more of my conversation with Ashley, go to patreon.com/Lindsay Hine. Thanks, everybody. Have a good weekend.